The economic tree has some green shoots, but will they continue to grow, or will a freeze hit?
This is Jerry Toome with Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Toome. Jerry Toome is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Toome Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management, or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Toome. This is Michael Williams. Well, Jerry, we got a handful of things to talk about today.
A lot.
Like we mentioned at the start of the show there, we want to talk about the economy. We got some positive things in the economy, but is that a good sign that things are about to start to grow? Or is it like Texas, we get those and then the freeze hits and they go away for a little while?
I know. You always have one of those, the trees are going, hey, it's springtime. And all of a sudden you see the buds on the trees and, oh, no, here comes the last minute freeze in February or whatever. And just, you know, it seems to happen. That might be what we're going to get ready to see here. But we'll see. We're going to cover the evidence and give you both sides of the equation here on today's show. We got a ton to talk about, Michael, if we get through it all. We got the analogy of the Joe and the volcano. Is this the last harvest before the volcano blows or not? Oh, could be, maybe not. We got more, even more than we had last week. Skepticism about the latest job report, which we know is not politically oriented at all or stilted. No, we got what happens with war and energy. What's the Fed doing lately? We got cyclical versus secular. I don't even know where to get started yet. But I don't know, the thing that we talked about before the show that kind of has my passion here, got me started, got me riled. Some days you get me real riled, Michael.
Right.
I don't know. It probably makes for good radio, but anyway, it's I said this last week, and of course we didn't have time to analyze this last week before the show. And the reason we didn't was because the report just came out right before the show, and so okay, we got the raw numbers, and the market of course had a party, but we knew that as of last week, the jobs report from the payroll report said, hey, 254,000 new jobs. It was double, more than twice the best estimate of anybody out there. All the brokerage firms on Wall Street had their estimate of what it was going to be. It was double the highest bidder. That's just kind of, wow, this is spectacular. And it happens just amazingly right before the election. How does that happen? It's impossible. Really?
Everybody was having a party.
And keep in mind, the jobs went from a mere 159,000 new jobs in August to 254,000 in September. So, hey, we got party hat. Get the party hats out. Mm-hmm. It's not 4th of July. It's New Year's Eve. Where's your little, you know, you blow out the little thing and you got, you know, anyway, the hats, crazy hats on. Well, anyway. Color me skeptical again now that I've had a week to digest all this. Now, the unemployment rate, which is the household survey, that one to me is a little more reliable, but that one did drop from 4.3 to 4.1. So I may have to, the old deal, I have to eat my hat, you know, if I'm wrong later on. But let me just, I don't know, this could be, maybe I'm being too skeptical. Maybe I'm just, oh, Jerry, you're just a perma bear. No, I'm not a perma bear. And we want to talk about that if we get it in today's show. Is the longer term, what we call a secular outlook. We're going to talk about cyclical bears versus secular bears. What are they? The Art of War with Sun Tzu said, know your enemy. He said, know your enemy. What does that mean? And if he said basically, and I'm paraphrasing here. Now, Sun Tzu, if you're not familiar with the Art of War, it's standard doctrinal stuff that's training you got to do if you go through a military college. It's got to get, you got to understand it's written in 600 B.C., but summarizing here very quickly, Sun Tzu, the Art of War, he said this. He said, if you don't know yourself and you don't know your enemy, expect to lose every battle. He said, on the other hand, if you know yourself, you know how what your capabilities are, you know what you're doing really well, but you don't know anything about your enemy, then you're going to lose one for every one you make. Every victory you have, you're going to have a loss. He said, but if you know your enemy and you know yourself, expect to prevail in every battle. That's part of what this is all about. And we want to get to this before the show's out. What is a cyclical bear? What is a secular bear? What do they look like? How do they behave? And what's most important about it right now is, where are we? Mm-hmm. Are we in a rampant bull market that it'll never end? It's going to go up until the year 2050 with only 10% corrections every... No. That's not the way it works. The market, if you look at it over a 100-year period, is like winter, summer, but it transitions into spring first, of course. Then you have the winter, and then you have hard winters. And so the issue is you've got to understand, where are we in history? And we're going to feed this in. We've got fourth-turning information that fits right into the schedule on it. So we're going to talk about what is the difference between a secular bear and a cyclical bear. My opinion right now is I still think we're going to have a cyclical bear market before the next year's out, before the probably 6 to 9 months. What's the trigger event going to be? Well, we'll talk about that a little bit. I still think there's a lot of mischief to be had, maybe in the Middle East. We will see. I do not believe that Israel is just going to stand by and take this. Netanyahu.
Well, they've already said they won't.
Well, he cares less about Biden and Kamala and who's in the White House. He said he's going to retaliate, and the question is, how effective is he going to be in retaliating, and what are the ramifications of that, and will it accelerate? And we're going to have information on the potential for the Gulf War. Now, this is from Alpine Macro. And keep in mind, Alpine Macro is not a perma bear by any means. Matter of fact, they've up until recently, they've been all bullish. Now it's 50-50. Now they got half bears, half bulls. We'll get back to that later in the show. But I want to just cover the issue about the jobs report. Now, we know that there's no way possible. This is not possible, is it, Michael? I don't think it's possible at all that the government could sandbag the numbers. Oh, what is sandbagging? I still remember when I was in college, we had a corporation. It was a buyer's club that we did. And you could pay a membership fee, and then you could buy anything you wanted around the world, just about. And of course, it wasn't world back then. It was just all the United States. This is the 1970s, folks. There wasn't a whole lot of international trade going on.
Well,
then,
you lived in Texas, so Texas is the world, right?
That's true. Yeah, well, I forgot about that. But anyway, but the issue is you could pay this membership, one-time membership, and then an annual fee for membership, and you could buy stuff at wholesale, which is way cheaper in some cases. You know, appliances were not that much different. They are maybe a 10 or 15% markup. You didn't save a lot. It hardly wasn't even worth doing. Furniture, on the other hand, 50% markup. So you could, a $1,000 couch you could get for $500. So it was a big deal. And I remember we had a new guy that came in as a new sales manager. He had owned them before. And we had this big contest. And it was my group and the people I led in the sales team versus the other guy. And the other guy had three times more people than I did because it's, you know, without going into great detail. So it looked like he was going to win the sales contest. But the new guy that came in had been an owner of a previous organization, and he kind of knew what he was doing. And he came in, and at the last, what he did was he didn't quite turn in all of his applications. He didn't let the other side know how many he had. And so at the end of the day, the other team handed in all their new apps because it was a big contest, who could bring in the most new sales memberships. And he comes out with his stack of sandbag. He had sandbagged a whole bunch of orders, and with the smaller team, we won the contest. The other guy, I can't even remember his name now, he was ruined forever. It blew him away so bad he was useless going forward almost. It just blew his confidence. Anyway, so I wouldn't ever want to say that the federal government would sandbag some of these numbers, but they're quite interesting here. So we know the unemployment rate, again, went from 4.3 to 4.1. We know the new jobs, the payroll report, which is big corporations, 254,000. I don't know, when I read other people. So I want to say, okay, am I just a lone wolf out here? And I'm like, Jerry, you shouldn't be so skeptical. You should trust the government on everything they do, especially the current regime. Just toe the line. Be perfect. Okay. Well, let's see. NDR. That's one of our sources.
Ned Davis.
They said the household survey reported 780. Now, these numbers are not all kosher. There's a little bit of difference in some of them, and it depends on how they're looking at the numbers. But just bear with me. They said the household government sector, 785,000 jobs from the government versus 79,000 on the private payroll. Okay, now, here's my question. You have an election coming up in less than a month now. Somehow, out of the blue, the government decided they needed nearly a million new people on the payroll. Bang! And it just happened to show up last month. I'm not skeptical of that at all. Are you? Are you skeptical about that, Muggle?
I'm not a big skeptical person, but that one shocked me.
Especially if it's just an anomaly, Jerry, just an anomaly. They show private payrolls up to 79,000. Okay, again, now these numbers aren't going to be all consistent because they're coming from different sources looking at it from slightly different angles. EPB, we use them a lot. Construction, manufacturing have lost 2 million jobs. It got worse in September. The leading indicator of employment. They have an indicator that says, okay, here's what employment does later. The leading indicator is still going down, not going back up. The coincident indicator, they said, was up 0.7, barely positive.
It's pretty much flat.
Pretty much flat. Even the best jobs report over the months, if you look at the trend and not one single month that kind of pops out of order, the trend is down. So you had a bounce, but in a downtrend. So it's like the bouncing ball bouncing down a set of stairs. We had a really big bounce last month, but it's still trajectory is down. They haven't changed the trajectory yet. Alpine Macro. Alpine, again, is about 16 economists around the world. Very accurate. I love their reports. They said, now, we have questions about the accuracy of this. Oh, really? Now, wait a minute. What? Let me read you some direct quotes. Joe Kalish of Ned Davis said this. Of those counted as employed in the household survey, the government sector added 785,000. They only saw a $79,000 increase in private industry. Then we had, of course, the guys we talked about with EPB. We've already quoted them. Let's go to Alpine Macro. Let's go to Mark McClellan. He's a bond analyst with Alpine Macro. He said, seasonal adjustment and survey size issues raise question marks over the accuracy. The question mark? Oh, no, it's gospel. We know it's true. Publish it on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. If you do ever have to revise it, it needs to be on page 15 in a small corner next to an ad.
Well,
so you can't see
real
it.
Real quick on that, though. With that sentence, a lot of people don't realize when they report jobs, it's not the actual number. There is
it's
adjustment.
A guesstimate that gets adjusted. Okay, so seasonal adjustment and survey size issues raise, survey size means how many people are you surveying, raises question marks over the accuracy of the official September figures. If I were to interpret what I think Mark McClellan is saying, I would think he would be saying, this is hogwash. But I'm going to say it very nicely and very diplomatically because I don't want anybody in the government to get mad at me and freeze me out of their information. Ooh, that never could happen, would it? Seasonal adjustment survey size issues raise question marks over the accuracy of the official September figures, which, by the way, appear inconsistent with the overall message from the broader labor market data. Quits and hiring rates in the JOLTS survey are still in a downtrend. The ISM economy-wide employment index is hovering below 50. That's contraction. The Kansas City, which is this is Fed, labor conditions indicator, composed of 24 different indicators, continues to point to rising unemployment in the coming months. But we know it's 254,000, double the gains of the best estimate. But this one is also by the Fed, points to continued rising unemployment. Moreover, the payroll gains in September occurred in what we termed catch-up sectors, largely non-interest-sensitive sectors that have been struggling to regain the jobs they shed during the pandemic, like leisure, hospitality, healthcare, education, state and local government. These sectors have provided a strong hiring tailwind since the end of 22, but however, the hiring in these sectors appeared to be gradually fading this year until August. Before jumping suspiciously in September, Jerry Tuma did not make this up. Jerry Tuma did not write this article. Jerry Tuma is quoting Mark McClellan. I didn't go search for people to prove my point, folks. These are our regular, weekly, daily analysts that we take their subscriptions. Some of the best analysts in the world. They said this is probably a blip, not a change in trend. Okay, now, so we've quoted NDR, said we don't really buy it. EPB, which says we don't really buy it. Alpine Macro says questioning the reliability. Bank Credit Analyst said we harbor concerns about, this is Irene Tunkel, we quote her regularly on the show, we harbor concerns about the reliability of the data. Okay, what does that mean? They're skeptical that this is correct. We harbor concerns about the reliability of the data. But for now, it appears aggressive monetary easing is going to cause it to go up. And if that's true, then it will overheat again. So harboring data, concerns about the data. The ISM indicator, Institute of Supply Management, is still in contraction for manufacturing services. The JOLTS indicator, job losses, that essentially is still going down. The Fed wage hike increase is still going down. All right, here's another one. So it's in these charts, you can look at the chart. Michael, you see the ISM chart?
Yes.
What does it look like?
Trending down.
It looks like a bouncing ball. Bouncing from the third floor to the second floor to the first floor to the basement. That's exactly what it looks like.
The other analogy we've used is a guy walking down the stairs with a yo-yo.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't turned around. This is a one-month, any best-case scenario right now. Now, I reserve the right to change my opinion later, but in the current market environment, it appears to be a one-month bounce in an ongoing downtrend. This happens to be a very extreme bounce right before the election. Simple coincidence, we know. McClellan, he said, MarketWatch reported, MarketWatch is CBS, by the way, MarketWatch, or at least they used to be aligned with them, they reported that before adjustments, the private sector actually lost. This made the headlines, didn't it?
No.
Did you see this on NBC? Did you see this on the front page of the Wall Street Journal or on NBC? Any of the news reports that give you the information the stock people eat every moment?
No.
MarketWatch reported that before adjustments, the private sector actually lost 450,000 jobs. The government sector gained 918,000. Now, I would never want to say that our politicians might be sandbagging some of this stuff so they'd happen to bring it out right before the election within days, because what happens is these things, if they get revised, they normally get revised downward. I think 10 out of the last 13 have got revised downward. But again, instead of being on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, it's on page 25, right next to an ad, and it looks like the obituaries.
Already this year, they revised, for the year, they've already revised down about 1 million jobs.
I know.
Jobs that just never existed.
But you see, the market reads it and takes it for the gospel truth, and they don't pay any attention to the adjustments. Now, let me give you the worst of all of them in terms of reality, and you can be the judge on whether these numbers are accurate or not. Or whether there might be some monkey business going on. I don't know. All right, Marko Bajovic, this company that he's writing for is called Arco Mina Research. All right, so let me just read a few quotes from here. You probably heard now about the great September employment report and how great it was. However, the data disagrees with that, telling us that not only it wasn't great, but it was also so weak it points to a recession. Now, Time out. Is this possible? The data disagrees, tells us not only was it not great, but it points so weak it points to recession. Now, how can there be that much disparity? The 254,000 non-farm payroll report, which again is the big corporations in September, coming after 159,000 in August, which was revised up from initial 142,000, sounds like great job growth. This means the economy is still growing strong. Everything's fine. The labor market is nowhere near falling off the cliff, right? Well, not so fast. What if you look under the hood? He said, if we look under the hood, we're looking at a recessionary non-farm payroll. Yes, you read that right. Here's the explanation. Namely, first of all, the seasonal factor. See, they have a seasonal adjustment to all these numbers. That just means, okay, it's September's different than June, etc., different season. The seasonal factor in September 24th was the highest adjustment on the record going back to 1939. Amazing coincidence here, don't you think? Amazing. Yeah. This is flabbergasting, amazing coincidence that it's the biggest adjustment seasonally going back to in history. And the history goes back to 1939. That might be a relevant amount of history. So he said the reported non-farm payroll growth of 254,000 is clearly far from actual. It's an estimate. If you use the same factor that was used a year ago in September 2023, non-farm payrolls would have been 145,000 jobs, which is a mere 100,000 below the reported number. If the seasonal factor for 2024 was the same as 2007 to 2019, 12-year period, pretty recent, then it would have been 350.
Just 35.
35,000 jobs, more than 200,000 below the reported number. Lowest read during that entire period. If it was same seasonal factor as we used in 2008 to 2010, the non-farm payroll would be, prepare yourself, negative 78,000, which is recessionary, and more than 300,000 below the reported number.
So it sounds like the seasonal adjustment's pretty important.
Seasonal adjustment has made this thing look like we have a cake. It's a birthday cake. It's got great icing on the top. It got your little, you know, candles on there. Everything is wonderful. But we're not done yet. And that's before the likely downward revisions we're likely to see in the coming months. If you factor out the likely downward revisions or factor them in, we could, because again, they've last time I checked, they had factored that 10 of the last 13 months have been decisively factored back down again, adjusted. He said we could easily be looking at a negative 200,000 jobs in September. You read that right. ADP private payroll. So in other words, if you're not looking at the government, what the government says, ADP is a private company. It showed the weakest September on record, 260,000 jobs lost. Quite a swing from 260,000 jobs lost to 254,000 jobs gained. Now, I realize their methodology is a little different, but still, what's wrong with this picture? Some would say it's a problem with collecting the data. Others would say it's deliberate government trying to paint a rosy picture. He claims it's, oh, no, it's all about all the seasonal adjustments that we can't adjust because of COVID, et cetera. He said, but the reality is, if you took the numbers he thinks are accurate, the 4.1% unemployment rate, which was lower solely due to government jobs, without it would have been at 4.5. If we're looking at negative 200,000 jobs and 4.5% unemployment rate, it would be hard to find a single person who would think the economy is not in a recession already. I will let you be the judge. So, anyway, but we know that everything's always accurate. But that bottom line is, color me skeptical, and let's go on to the next topic.
All right. Well, we knew we'd get you some passion, because, again, this week it just kept coming in from all our different sources. Here's why we're a little skeptical.
Michael, it would be one thing. These are people, all of them except the last guy, are people we read every week. It would be one thing if one or two of them said, "I we're kind of skeptical about these numbers." Mm-hmm. But when 100% of them said, "We're skeptical about these numbers," some of them said it very diplomatically, and some of them blasted people. They're like, "This is bogus."
And this is coming from both reports that are both, they tend to be bullish recently or bearish recently.
Yes, and
it's not
again,
one side or the other.
It is. Some are bearish, some are bullish, some are in the middle. All three are, anyway, so I don't want to continue.
Well, along with the job numbers, because the job numbers is one of the main reasons, at least how I interpret the Fed recently, as to why they did such a big decrease in the rate, right? Because they were concerned about employment, because that's their second mandate.
But now, what are they going to do now? The Fed's got to say, we were wrong. Oh, the jobs are a whole lot stronger than before. Now our risk is inflation. They got a flip-flop. Now, was the Fed right the first time, or is the Fed right now, you know, having to change their view? I don't know. My skepticism is showing through here. Color me skeptical. I think the Fed is probably not going to go, oh, by the way, now the economy is a lot stronger. They just told us 2 weeks ago they were more worried about the downside than the inflation rate. This new job report says, no, you need to be worrying about the inflation rate. Which one's right? Either the jobs report's right or the Fed's right. I'll let you be the judge. They're not both right. One of them's wrong and one of them's right. Which one's right?
Right. And to get that soft landing everybody's talking about, they got to thread that needle.
They really do.
Which they have done in the past. I mean, it is possible.
Yes and no. They have had two soft landings in modern history since World War II, 1966 and 1994. But if you go back and reread front page, just go to the front page of our new newsletter, The Election Blues, you'll see that they never raised rates to this degree and had a soft landing. Not ever before. The only thing that would make me rethink my position right now, and that's basically what I'm seeing on the money supply charts. And so we talked about that before we went on the air. There is an expanding global money supply. So if you look at, normally speaking, because again, the Fed's driving the economic car, right? The Fed, the Treasury gets in there too. But the bottom line is...
the Treasury is the backseat driver.
They are at this point. So the Fed has taken their foot off the accelerator, and they've been pumping the brake now for 2 years. And normally, when the brake pumps, the money supply shrinks, and you go into recession. At the same time, though, what's been happening, I'm looking at a chart of global money supply. Global money supply was contracting in 2002, and then it contracted again in 2003. It's now expanding again. What that tells us is the Fed has been pumping the brake. They've stopped pumping the brake now. But behind the scenes, what to most people is reverse repos and all this kind of stuff. It gets very esoteric. Bottom line is the Treasury's been pushing on the accelerator again instead of the Fed. So the switching, who's driving that part of the car, that's the only thing that makes me think we might have a soft landing, and I still kind of doubt it.
All right. Well, we'd like to go ahead and take this time to remind you that you can get to know a little bit more about us by looking at our website, cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. Again, you can find more information about us. You can look up previous special reports that Jerry has written. If you want the current special report, we just ask for your email address. We don't bombard you. You'll get emailed about once a week saying, hey, the latest radio show is now available on the website. And whenever Jerry writes a new special report, you automatically get it. That's only real emails we send you. We don't do much more than that. We're not going to bombard you with phone calls or anything. Only if you ask us for a free consultation will we actually reach out to you otherwise. So again, all that can happen on the website. You can ask for a free consultation. You can sign up for the latest special report, Election Blues, which has a lot of the charts that we're referring to. And you can see previous radio shows. So if you missed one, or if you'd like to recommend to somebody to go listen to it, they are available at cornerstonereport.com. If you'd like to call us for a free consultation, you can reach us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 1-800-327-4285. Well, Jerry, we spent a lot of time updating everybody on the jobs numbers because we thought that was pretty important.
It is.
That the detail underneath that number was not talked about.
There's a whole lot to that. And if I'm wrong, folks, I'll be the first to tell you I'm wrong. But we're not going to know for months. It's going to be several months before we're going to know if this is going to happen. I can tell you this. There are some green shoots, and I'm going to – we literally have to give both sides of the story. We can't give only the negative and not the positive. Now, there are times we're going to be universally bearish. There's times we're going to be universally bullish. If we go back to the Fed, I mentioned that the money supply globally is expanding. That's a positive sense. The question is kind of like the analogy of the airplane coming down for a landing. Is it going to hit the deck too hard and crash? Or is it going to slowly put out, you know, most of these commercial flights we go on, they're very good at that. Consumer prices, remember, this is part of the stress we're dealing with. Consumer prices are up 22.5% since December of 2019 before COVID. That's ITR. Here's some of the other numbers. The consumer price index has dropped down to only 2.4 compared to where it was overnight. Core CPI, 3.3. Sticky CPI, things that don't move very much, down to 3.5. So we're not quite to the Fed's. The Fed wants the number at 2.0. We're not quite there yet.
And sticky's even been going up the past few months.
It has been, and that's true. And houses are still at 4.9. It's a housing shortage nationwide. So these things do not confirm that inflation is indeed dead. Dracula could come back because we didn't drive a stake through his heart here. But at the same time, I don't see how you have both. I think you either have a hard landing, and I think it'll be a mild recession and a bear market, or inflation is going to take off again, one of the two. If the plane lands, manages to not have to hit the deck hard, and you take back off again, inflation's just going to come right back again. I'm not talking about tomorrow or 6 months from now. I'm talking about like the 1970s. If you look at the CPI from the last 15 years compared to the 1970s, in the mid-70s, they did the same thing we're doing now, and it's almost eerie how it is. It's eerie how similar these are. Big wave inflation went back down, never got back to the old lower levels, and then took right back off again. So that's probably what we're going to see, even if we have a somewhat of a soft landing and or a mild recession, which is what I still think we're having. Now, in order to balance this out, though, let me give you some green shoots, and then we're going to talk about the market. Because the market is Remember the movie? I don't think I ever saw it, but I remember the name of it. Joe and the Volcano.
Right.
All right. So we're going to talk about the how does the volcano have anything to do with the market? Well, we'll come back to that in a moment. Here's some green shoots, because again, we don't want to be accused of being perma bears, because we're not perma bears. We think there's a cyclical bear coming. I don't know the exact time frame. Obviously, it doesn't appear like it's going to happen before the election. I still think we're going to have a cyclical bear in the next 9 months or so. But after that, we think, and if we have time today, we'll reestablish what we think is the secular bull story, because I think it's going to have a milder bear. It could still be severe. I mean, a 30 or 35% bear is radical for most people. We haven't had one in a while. But I don't think it's the end of the story. I still think you're going to have rising stock market in the second half of the decade, but with a big interruption in the middle. Green shoots on the economy. The second quarter, we had 3% annualized growth rate. Most of that was government spending. No suspicions there, right? Oh, no. We added a bunch of government. And a lot of it was inventories. Now, the speculation, you mentioned this before the show, are a lot of corporations stocking up on inventory just in case Trump wins.
Yeah, there's an increase in the amount of shipping coming out of China during this time because Trump was talking up his tariffs.
Makes sense. So is that
they want to get their stuff before the tariffs.
Okay, think about this. If it's stocking up on inventory because of a political event that could occur, is that true economic growth? Or is that no? Because we're sticking that inventory in a warehouse. We still have to sell that. So maybe we will sell that, but we might end up with too much inventory. M2, again, I mentioned, is bouncing, and that's a positive for the economy. Retail sales, discretionary retail sales are rising, but they're still below the zero axis. In other words, they're not in an expansion on that, but at least it's going up. Delinquencies on properties, not on properties as much as credit cards and consumer credit, are still rising, but they've slowed down a little bit. Banks are reporting improving loan demand, but again, it's below zero, so it was at the bottom a year ago when all the bank crisis hit. Now it's moving back up, but it's still below zero. Tightening on credit, below zero, but it's, again, slightly improving. Atlanta's now GDP estimate for the Q3 is 2.5%. That could be right. That's not a recession. But remember, and we have this in our front page of our election blues, most of the time you have positive GDP the month before or the quarter before you start a recession in or a bear market. The ISM services index surged. Now, that's a real positive there. Of all these other things, I can make the case these are not that big of deals because most of them went to plunge and now are coming back up above, but they're still not above zero. The ISM services index, 54.9. Anything below 50 is contractionary, above 50 is not. And new orders, 59%. So those are positive, actual green shoots on the economy. The producer price index is below, has fallen from zero. Now it's 0.4. It's gone up a little bit. And the leading index of economic indicators remains, that means stays, I mean hasn't changed, at the longest decline in history without causing a recession yet. The two longest periods, 1972 to 74, and 2006 to 2008, we now have the longest running battle with the leading index of economic indicators declining without a recession. So bottom line is, I still think we're headed for a recession. I still think it's going to be mild. It looks like it's in the fourth quarter or the first part of next year. We don't know yet. Reserve the right to change my opinion later. I'm not trying to be a perma bear here, but the bottom line is it doesn't look to me like we're out of the woods yet. It does look to me like we've had an anomaly. Let's be very nice about it. An anomaly on the jobs report coincidentally just happened to happen right before the election. And so, kumbaya, we're all going to be friends. Everything's nice. We don't have any issues whatsoever, do we?
All right, well, we've been talking quite a bit about the economy. What if we switch over to stocks? What are you seeing currently in the stock market?
Stock market is playing off of the economy. So the issue here is, and I do want to get to, if we can get to the Joe and the volcano thing before we run out of time and talk about cyclical and secular. Let's take the current issues on stocks. If you look at valuations, now remember, valuations are not good timing indicators. Mm-hmm. If you're taking notes at home, write down not They're not good timing indicators.
Yeah, you can stay overvalued for quite a while.
Valuations, where you compare stocks to their history, how expensive are they relative to earnings? They're risk indicators. They're not timing at all. They can be overvalued for very long periods of time, or in the ancient days when stocks were undervalued. Like, I remember 1982, John Templeton came out and said, stocks are such an incredible buy. Sell everything else and buy U.S. stocks. He said, I'll eat it for breakfast every day. He was absolutely right. All right, so we're still at Mount Everest levels of overvaluation, but again, it's not a good timing indicator. It is a good risk indicator. What that tells you is if you're buying now and trying to hold it in a buy and hold fashion, you might not like that decision in a few years. Might be 18 months, might be 6 months, might be 12 months. We don't know. But historically, overvaluation occurs before bear markets, but at the same time, it doesn't give you a clue about timing. Here's a positive, so let's not ignore the positives. The breadth, how many stocks are going up compared to how many are going down? And according to bank credit analysts, 37 of 48 sectors that they have subdivided, 77% of them beat the S&P in the last month. Earnings per share are still on a positive growth trend, although it's slowing down. What are the negatives? Earnings per share is way overestimated. They're still projecting, Wall Street analysts are still projecting 16.3% growth. Really? When 6.4% was last quarter? So the analysts on Wall Street are still projecting it's kind of like if you go, remember the wide world of sports for years, you know, you have this big slope and the guy falls off and goes bang, 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 like one of the car crash commercials. He's just banging across, boom, boom, boom. That's the way this looks, only going up. So you're at the bottom of the slope for the skis and you're looking up at the earnings projections for the next 6 months, according to Wall Street. So even though last quarter earnings grew at 6.4%, they're still estimating 16.3. And unless you go by 1 month's job report, which to me is highly suspicious, how are you going to increase that by 10% over the next 2 months or this month? It's grossly unrealistic, but that's the way Wall Street works. And again, this is another thing that makes me think we might be near the top of the cycle, or at the top of the cycle, is historically speaking, it's human behavior, recency bias. And we know at the top of every cycle, the analysts are grossly overestimating the growth. The arrow points straight up. The bend in the curve happens and they drive their car right off the road and it crashes down the ditch. Now, they also do it, or humans, they do it at the bottoms, when we have a bottom. We hadn't had a bottom in a while. So the issue is the Magnificent Seven growth rate's going significantly down. So if we do have a soft landing, it'll be historic. And I think the historicity of it is we have endured, if we have a soft landing, we will look back and say we endured a radical, and I mean radical, increase in the money supply and tightening by the Fed, and somehow we managed to endure that and have only a soft landing.
All right, so how does that apply to Volcano Joe?
Volcano Joe. All right, so I'm going to read a little bit. I'm going to summarize most of this pretty quickly. This is from a news report from Doug Petta with Bank Credit Analyst, and this is June 24th of 24. So this is a couple of 3 months old, 3 months old now. But he did an analysis on all the bull markets. So again, we want to contrast bull and bear. But again, there are two types. You've got to understand the two types. There's a cyclical bull and there's a secular bull. There's a cyclical bear and there's a secular bear. Let's define the terms. Cyclical means in the terms of the business cycle. So you have an expansion, you have a contraction. A cyclical bull goes up and then goes back down in a bear. But it's not typically a once-in-a-generation kind of bear market. It's not one of those that just wrecks everybody for a very long period of time. A secular bear, think of it like this. Black bears, if you go to Yellowstone, they can be a nuisance. A black bear in Yellowstone, okay, he gets out and he knocks off the trash can lid and eats the trash and dumps the trash over. They can be a nuisance, but generally they're not life-threatening. And, you know, if you know anything about bears, if you go to Yellowstone Park and you go, okay, the instructions on what do you do about a black bear. if a black bear gets aggressive and comes after you, which typically doesn't happen, they're not that aggressive. They're not going to take on, you're not going to have a 250-pound black bear trying to take on a human. Humans are too close to their size. They typically will leave you alone. Unless their cubs are threatened, that might be a different story. But still, the vast majority of the time, black bears are really not dangerous to humans.
Unless you give them a reason.
Unless you give them a really strong reason. So they get out their nuisance. They knock the trash can off. They eat the trash. There's something smells good in the trash. They try to eat that. They have a little bit of a scavenger in them. They're not really that dangerous. That's kind of your cyclical bear market. Crash of 87. That was a perfect example of a cyclical bear market. It was caused by too much program trading. We wrote an article about this, and we document some of this on our website. But we wrote an article, and this was me. I wrote the article back in March of 1987. I said, 1929 revisited. Of course, it wasn't the magnitude of 1929, but it was a straight-down crash. As a matter of fact, the crash that occurred Black Monday 1987 was the worst one-day crash in the history of the market. It was actually worse than the 29 crash. It wasn't worse than the 29 crash fulfillment, because the 29 crash started there and it ended up being a three-year bear market. It was a massive secular bear or grizzly bear. It was the crash of 87 was a cyclical bear. It went down 35% from the August top until the bottom. The second bottom was in December. And then it went back up again. And the economy didn't miss a lick. And again, like I said last week, you know, Reagan is going to the airport and the reporters are, you know, 50 reporters are chasing him with their microphones. What happened to the stock market? What happened? And he turned around and, I don't know, too much selling. He didn't know what had happened. He was, you know, and what happened was that too many people bought the same software and sold at the same level because the software said when it hits this level, get out. We called it portfolio insurance in those days, which I did not do. But the big Wall Street firms seemed to. And as Ted Theodore once said, one of our analysts in New York, he said, what might have worked for one firm or 10 firms or maybe 100 firms wouldn't work for 1,000 firms. You can't have 1,000 firms getting a sell signal on the same day generated by a computer. It bothers me a little bit, but right now, surely they've figured out how to keep that from happening again. But it bothers me a little right now that 80%, best information is 80% of the trading on Wall Street is now done by computer. Uh-oh. What happens if somebody programs something in there that's really kind of detrimental to us? We'll find out, won't we, in the next 6 months or so. But anyway, going back to the analogy. So we got cyclical bulls and secular bulls. We got cyclical bears, secular bears. So a black bear, again, in Yellowstone is not really that big a danger. If you tried to mess with one of their babies, maybe the mama's going to get after you, but for the most part, they're going to leave humans alone. A grizzly bear, on the other hand, is dangerous, extremely dangerous. So a male black bear, typically 250 pounds, the female smaller than that. A daddy bear, grizzly, can be up to 1,600 pounds, and they can be mean dudes. They can kill a horse. Thou shalt not mess with grizzly bears. They are bad news. If you get around one, your best job is either, if you can't get away, and this is true, we've looked this up many times before, if you can't get away from them, because a grizzly can outrun a horse for a short distance, if you can't get away from them, you crawl up in a ball, you put your hands over your head, you put your knees up to your chest and hope he doesn't eat your innards, you know, and hope that he doesn't think you're fun to play with. That's basically what with a black bear, just run away. If they get too close to you, punch them in the nose, fight back. But the bottom line with a grizzly, you better not try to fight back because he thinks that's great fun. And he's 10 times stronger than you. All right, so with this analogy, what we want to do is define some terms. And I still want to get to the Joe and the volcano before we run out of time. So again, a cyclical versus secular bear. Some of the warning signs, extreme overvaluation. We have that right now. So this would be the one thing that would make me worried about a secular bear starting. But guess what? We had the same situation in 2000. 2000 was a mark of a top. We had a cyclical bear market after that. So if you look at it on a short-term basis, you had a cyclical bear. The bear market lasted, you know, it still lasted almost 3 years. But it was not the end of the day. 2008 was the end of the secular bear period. So that kind of marked the top, and it finished out in 2009. So historically speaking, if you have a cyclical bear, it's usually short and they're shallow. And frankly, they represent opportunities to buy once you get to the bottom. But I emphasize the word when you get to the bottom. Unless you're dollar cost averaging, you're real young, you're putting money in every month, that's a different story. All right. Now, but then typically goes on to new record highs or goes back at least to the old high, which is what happened in the which happened during the George Bush era. So cyclical bull markets, that's where they go up for a long time. You have cyclical corrections. I'm sorry, this is a secular bull market with cyclical corrections within it. 1942 to 1966, kept running. Then from 66 to 82, you had a secular bear. So you have summer, spring, summer, then you go into fall and winter. The fall and winters are the ones that are very dangerous. The fall and winter, to me, the way I'm viewing this right now, I think we're about to have a cyclical bear market. But I'm a perma bear. I think it's followed, whatever degree it happens, 30-35% would be my guess. I think we got another run to the end of the decade. I think the next secular bear probably is in the 2030s. And I think that's when, if you can incorporate fourth turning, that's a whole nother show. But I think all those kind of things are going to line up at the same time. You had a 24-year secular bull market from 1942, when it looked like we were going to turn the World War II, up to 66. Then you had a cyclical. Then you had a secular bear that ran from 66 to 82. So know your enemy. Sun Tzu, we mentioned that earlier in the day. What is your enemy? Your enemy are the bears. Your friend is obviously the bulls, right? Okay, so you want to know if we're entering a cyclical bear, if we have one, or a secular bear, because a cyclical bear, you can make the case that, A, you could ride those out if you have enough risk tolerance, or you dollar cost average and buy more shares, or you wait till the bottom, depending on your age and your risk tolerance, and you buy more back in, but you're expecting another run. The next secular bull lasted from 82 to 2000. So we had a 24-year run in the 60s that culminated in 66. You had an 18-year run that lasted until 2000. And then you had a secular bear following that, which lasted from 2000 to 2009. Now we're back in another secular bull. Winter, spring, summer. It follows patterns just like winter. They're cyclical. So the secular bull that we're in now has lasted from 2009 to 2024. That's a 15-year period. So it's shorter than the other ones, which is another reason I don't think it's the end yet. So again, if you're going into secular bear, the declines are long and steep, and they're monstrous bears. The 2000 was the top of the last cycle. The 2000 crash began that whole segment there. So a cyclical bear market right now actually might be positive for the market for the long term. But bottom line is, at this point, the problem is people forget about risk because of what they've been through. Now, let me run through quickly Joe and the volcano. Here's something from, again, I talked a little bit about this on the show, and we're covering mostly the stock market today, folks. Doug Petta, who's one of the chief investment strategists for their for the Bank Credit Analyst newsletter. This is called Not Dark Yet. And he talks about breaking down the bull. He's talking about the secular bull markets, right? And he breaks them down. He analyzes every secular bull we've had, and he breaks them down into deciles, tenths, one-tenth of each bull. It could be a five-year. Typically, a secular bull is going to be 18, 20 years, 24 to 18 years, so forth. So the first decile of the bull is typically the best. Now, he's saying past performance, no guarantee future result, right? He's saying typically the first decile, the first 10% blast out of the gate, the average gain is 74%. That's a monster gain. Keep in mind, you've just gone through a bear, and then you have the new bull, and happy days are here again, and it's a monster burst out of the gate. After that, it settles down to somewhere in the teens or single digits, depending on where we are. The last decile is the second best one, and I think that's where we're at now, 33% annual gain. So again, we don't have time to develop this fully, But the analysis of the, of this whole thing is, if you can think about it, if we're in the last decile, which is where I think we are, because I don't think we're heading for a soft landing per se, then it's kind of like the old analogy is you're farming the last crop before the volcano blows. The volcano is smoking, you're getting trembling, you got a lot of lava flowing around, but it hasn't blown yet. But you got your second best crop. What do? Do you not plant a crop? Do you go, well, do we have enough time before the volcano blows to get the crop? Is it going to be a great crop? Could be a really good crop. But the 10th decile has been a really good crop in history, but usually it's before it blows. That's kind of what I think still is the case. I reserve the right to change my opinion later. If I'm wrong, we'll know within a short period of time because we will not be seeing a big decline. I'm skeptical. Color me skeptical that we're going to have a soft landing. But we'll deal with this and we'll keep reevaluating it every single day and every single week. This is Jerry Tuma and Michael Williams.
Jerry Tuma Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only. It should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.